Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. In a few moments, Neil Coulong will talk about the NFL draft. And Martavis Bryant being reinstated on a conditional basis for the Steelers. First of all, our play-by-play call of the day. It's always special when a guy hits for the cycle. It happened for the Nationals last night against the Colorado Rockies.
Swinging a line drive down the right field line. That's a fair ball. It's headed to the corner. Wieters has scored. Heading home is Lind. Heading home is Eaton. Heading for third is Turner. The throw there. The head first dive, and he's in there. Trey Turner has cleared the bases with a triple. He has seven runs batted in.
And Dave, he's hit for the cycle. Single, double, home run, and now a triple.
He becomes the third National to hit for the cycle. And the Nationals have broken it wide, wide open. 14-5.
And they end up winning the game 15-12 last night. And the Nationals beat the Colorado Rockies 15-12. Wow. All right. Anybody else tweet out anything while we're in news? Or?
Yes, we just found out that another former ESPN SportsCenter anchor, Chris Hassel, says his final day will be tomorrow. He goes, thank God I have an iPhone today, or I wouldn't find out, or I wouldn't have found out who was leaving the network today. So he was trying to be very lighthearted on what is a very dark day at the four-letter today.
It sure is. All right, Neil Coulong, the NFL draft is tomorrow, which is what I think ESPN is hoping will gloss over everything that they've done today. That's why I think they did it today, because they feel like tomorrow night they can gloss it over. I don't know. Let's bring in Neil Coulong now. Neil, welcome. Great to have you with us today.
It's great to be here as always. Thanks for having me.
All right, it's great to have you on board. All right, here we are zeroing in on the NFL draft. So as we zero in, it's tough, obviously, when the Steelers draft in the 20s like they do. But how have you zeroed in on you know, what you think they could do with it?
You know, if I had anything of an inkling of a guess, it went out the window when Jabril Peppers had a diluted sample at the combine. I think with that, it's tough to say that there is a prospect that you could reasonably see being available at 30 that they would definitely be interested in. I think where I sit now, my pick would really be other in any other poll that you might take, simply because the difficulty of trying to project who's going to be there after 29 picks, and two, more than anything, how is that player that's available at 30 going to be any more of a fit than any other player? So it really, I think this year, perhaps more than any other that I've been covering team, I have the least bit of insight as far as who they would take. I don't know who it's going to be, but I just get a sneaking suspicion it's not going to be anybody that we've talked about to this point.
Martavis Bryant gets a conditional return after his drug suspension. Do you think that changes the Steelers' thought process in the first three rounds?
I think, in a way, it might, but overall, probably not. Just due to the fact that you don't know who's going to be there. You could see, potentially, depending on, kind of what position gets prioritized, if the four quarterbacks all do get taken, which is kind of 50-50 in my mind, somebody has to fall. And I think if that's a receiver, if that's the best player available, why wouldn't you do it? You know, regardless of whether Bryant has been reinstated or not, one, he's still on the hook for a significant suspension if he does anything wrong. for probably the rest of his career. And two, it's not as if he's got 4 years remaining on his contract or anything. I mean, he's set to hit free agency, I believe, after the 2018 season now. And really, you have to kind of project now, what type of player is he going to be? Where is he going to be in terms of his character? Is he a player that, their offense is going to be able to count on? And if not, would you have needed to prepare for that in the 2017 draft? I think the answer for that is yes. Not to mention the fact you're picking 30th overall. At that point, it really is a value pick. It's not so much about where your future is going. You have to take a player who's worthy of that fifth-year option. You have to take a player that is somebody that can make an impact right away. And to me, any position on the Steelers right now, with the exception of quarterback and perhaps running back, that option is on the board. I think they'd be willing to look at just about anybody wherever they are. So wide receiver to me is definitely one of them. I mean, I don't know a whole lot of teams that are worse off for having a lot of really good receivers. And Pittsburgh's offense certainly would fit in with that.
In terms of pure potential, there seems to be several notable edge rushers out there. Would an edge rusher be on the Steelers' mind in any way?
Absolutely. If there's one that's worth the 30th pick, I think that position would probably get priority status over any others. Carl Lawson is a guy that you're seeing fall down to the 30 range for various reasons, not all of which are, he's a terrible player and a terrible person. I think he fits the bill for what they would look for. A developmental guy with some injury history, you might, be kind of worried about that. But again, as far as his upside goes, he fits probably, all of the checks that you would want outside of the medicals for that pick. He's a guy I think the Steelers would be very happy if he was to fall to that point. But then again, I mean, the edge rushing position is so valuable in the NFL. Teams are going to continue to reach on those kinds of players in the first round, regardless of a lot of things. We've talked about T.J. Watt, another player who might be available around that position. I think he's a guy that tested a lot better than, athletically than he looks on the field. But he's a player that, might fit the bill at 30 for what they're looking for. But overall, there are going to be a couple of them, I think, that might be around that area. I'm not sure how many of them they would want to pass on, but really it's all going to come down to who falls.
And that's where the quarterback part comes in. The quarterback part to me comes in is if, say, there's a run on them. Suddenly I want to pick Trubisky. Now I want to pick Watson. Now I want to pick Mahomes. To me, if there's a run, then I think it changes the back end of that first round of the draft.
I agree with that, absolutely. I would even say this. I think the most pivotal pick of this draft is really going to be what Cleveland does at 12.
Yes.
I'm not 100% convinced that they're going to go quarterback. I mean, really, just if you look at it logically, they kicked the can down the road last year with Jared Goff and Carson Wentz. They didn't want either of them with the top pick overall. And granted, Philadelphia gave – the Rams gave up quite a bit to move up. Philadelphia gave up quite a bit to move up. It's hard to ignore that. But at the same time, logic dictates you have to have a quarterback, right? To me, Goff and Wentz were vastly superior prospects and still not even great prospects in comparison to this year's quarterback crop. So if they were willing to do it last year, why wouldn't they do it this year? And really, there's not even a question, and there never was, that they're going to draft Myles Garrett first overall. Unless Myles Garrett, unless they see him as like the next Lawrence Taylor, it's really hard to say a team that just flat out does not have a quarterback, not even having a question of who they're taking first overall, devalues them. So really, for me, it's like if Trubisky or Watson or whoever else isn't worth the top pick, why is he worth the 12th? You already kicked the can down the road once, so you're at 12. Why not just say, look, we don't need to gamble on this. I've got a rope from here to Pittsburgh on my job. If I'm Sashi Brown, I'm going to take great football players. I'm not going to take a project at 12 if I don't have to. What's the difference between the 12th pick as far as this draft and quarterbacks goes and a guy that you can take in the second round? And the reason I say that really comes down to the Dallas Cowboys. The Cowboys improved 9 wins in one season by a fourth-round quarterback that really nobody, particularly wanted heading into the draft last season. And they won a ton of games with him because they drafted a great running back and they had a great offensive line in place. Look at what Cleveland's doing with their offensive line up front. Seems to me that that's kind of how they're modeling their franchise. So for me, it really doesn't make a whole lot of sense to want to take Trubisky at 12 when you can probably, you know, either trade back if somebody else is sold on Trubisky, get even more picks, and take a prospect like Mahomes, who I think has much more upside than Trubisky does, if you still want to spend a pick on the first round. So for me, I all of it is really going to depend on what Cleveland does at 12.
Right.
And that creates a market for a guy like DeShone Kizer later in the draft.
Right.
So I'll leave my incredibly long point with this. This year, Kevin Colbert trades out of the first round. He's never done that before, but there's probably going to be a market for Kizer. I don't think he's going to be taken before 30.
Right.
But I think a lot of teams are going to want to get ahead of San Francisco and Cleveland in the second round to do it, and 30 is a great spot for that.
When you look at this draft, Peter King of Monday Morning Quarterback and Sports Illustrated got a hold of Mike Mayock last weekend, and Mayock said that he talked to one general manager, and they said with his scouts, they sat down for 5 hours, and they went through the medicals. They've never had a five-hour meeting on medicals before. Then you add in the Mixon situation, the Reuben Foster diluted sample situation. You mentioned the Peppers diluted sample situation. Now the Conley situation in Cleveland. Between the medicals and the situations I just referenced, have you seen a draft lead up like this before?
No, and I'll say this. I probably would have said something similar last year with Tunsil's situation.
Yes.
And I think next year you're going to see a lot of the same stuff too. You know, maybe this is just me. I haven't dug into the numbers on this, but it really seems like there are a lot more reports of diluted samples coming back this year as opposed to the past. I wonder why that is. Was it a change in protocol, something that they're testing more intensely for now, or perhaps they weren't able to test as closely as they were before? But a lot more stuff seems to be coming out. I don't think it's really responsible for the media organizations that are kind of going after this Conley thing to be doing what they're doing. It really, you don't want to trivialize the accusation, but at the same time, the timing of it is really, really suspicious. And considering that the stuff that we've seen lately in regards to high-profile
Dalvin Cook,
all of a sudden, you know, they're getting into all this trouble. This close to the draft, it just seems unusual to me. And, you know, we saw it last year with Tunsil. Plain and simple, he got shook down. And you have to wonder about that as well. But to your point, it's requiring a lot of teams to put in a lot more investigative time into, you know, guys that they potentially might pick. And I think this is something we're going to see increase over the years, too.
And with Cook, there was some middle person that was putting out information about him being late, showing up with alcohol in his breath and things like that, and it turns out none of it's true.
Yeah, just out of nowhere. Again, you have to look at them case by case, but it just seems awfully convenient, you know. Whether it's true or not, somebody clearly seems to feel that they stand to gain something from it. So it's tough. It's really tough. I don't envy them in those jobs. That's about as hard as it gets. You have to make a judgment call on things that really are motivated by factors that are out of your control.
Oh, man. Hey, thanks so much, Neil. I know we got a hold of you today. You jumped right in there, as always. I always enjoy the conversation very much. We'll do the postmortem next week on this whole thing.
Definitely. I'm looking forward to it. Thanks for having me.
All right. Thanks. We'll have more answers then. That is Neil Coulong, USA Today. We'll talk with Neil next week and get his postmortem on what's going on with the NFL draft, which gets underway tomorrow. This is a day dominated by ESPN, but not the news they're not putting out any news. It's the people who are being let go. Jamie Sire from SportsCenter is the latest. She anchors the morning SportsCenter. She's the latest to put out that on Twitter that she is no longer with the network. It's a long list. Danny Cannell, Jason Stark, Len Elmore, Brett McMurphy, Dana O'Neill, Eamon Brennan. Some people that have done some good legwork, and Ed Werder, have done some good legwork and reporting for them over the years. Jay Crawford, let go. We'll come back. We'll talk more about it in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Imagine getting behind the wheel and looking forward to your journey ahead. If when you turned your car on, it did the same for you. Sunbury Motors Lincoln in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza in Sunbury has the full 2017 Lincoln lineup ready to invigorate your driving experience with affordable American luxury. Well-qualified buyers can take advantage of $4,000 cash back and 0% for 72 months on the luxurious 2017 Lincoln Navigator. Or lease a new 2017 Lincoln MKX all-wheel drive for $363 per month for 36 months. Sunbury Motors Lincoln is your destination for affordable American luxury. Located in Sunbury in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza and online at sunburylincoln.com. Financing with Lincoln AFS with approved credit. Lease based on stock number LB738, 10,000 miles per year and $3,900 total due at signing. Zero security deposit, tax and fees extra. Offer ends 5/3/2017.
All right, great to have you with us. As you know, I am not big on mumbo jumbo. Just say it, and whatever you mean, just get it done. All right? Well, ESPN today let go of Ed Werder, Scott Burnside, Joe McDonald, Pierre LeBrun, Brendan Fitzgerald, Dana O'Neill, Michael Goodman, Austin Ward, Jesse Temple, Brett McMurphy, Jim Bowden, Eamon Brennan, Mark Saxon, Jeremy Crabtree, Jean-Jacques Taylor, Derek Tyson, Jeanette Howard, Danny Cannell, Doug Padilla, Jason Stark, C.L. Brown, Trent Dilfer, Jay McManus, Ted Miller, Brian Bennett, David Ching, Max Olson, Jay Crawford, Ethan Strauss, Calvin Watkins, Justin Verrier, Ashley Fox, Chantel Jennings, Robin Lundberg, Len Elmore, and now Jamie Sire. That gets us to 36. That's 36 down and maybe as many as 64 more to go. So, Sean, they put out a statement yesterday, and under the category of extreme, complete mumbo-jumbo, this is their statement.
Okay, this was from President John Skipper. Actually, they released two statements, one from John Skipper, the president, and a second from his deputies, but this was from John Skipper. A necessary component of managing change involves constantly evaluating how we best utilize all of our resources, and that sometimes involves difficult decisions. Our content strategy, primarily illustrated in recent months by melding distinct personality-driven SportsCenter TV additions and digital-only efforts with our biggest sub-brand, still needs to go further, faster, and as always, must be efficient and nimble. Dynamic change demands an increased focus on versatility and value, and as a result, we have been engaged in the challenging process of determining the talent, anchors, analysts, reporters, writers, and those who handle play-by-play necessary to meet those demands. We will implement changes in our talent lineup this week. A limited number of other positions will also be affected, and a handful of new jobs will be posted to fill various needs.
Now, does anybody know what that means? Anybody? No. That means nothing. That means zero. It means we messed up and we overpaid for the NBA and the NFL. Now, who did that? The people let go?
No.
They've got nothing to do with that. Ah, boy. They're not the ones that negotiated bad deals. Again, you need, as I pointed out, you need to have the NFL contract. I know you do. I get that part. All right. But do you have to pay $1.47 billion for the NBA? I mean, really? I mean, what does that get you? Hey, $1.47 billion. I forgot to mention Roger Kosak. He's another one who got let go. They say in the end it's going to be about 100 people let go, they say it's going to be 50 names you will definitely recognize, 50 that you may not. It's a lot of ESPN employees. According to Jim Miller, who co-wrote a book on ESPN's history, said he is hearing from several ESPN employees who, despite advance word, are in shock and are frozen. This is an awful day in Bristol. Yeah, I can understand that completely. You go out, you work hard, you build your brand, you try to get yourself, you know, where you're not indispensable, but you put yourself in a spot where you're highly respected. How about that?
They're phrasing this as a content evaluation strategy.
Yeah, sure. I mean, come on. Say what it is. We in upper management are saving our jobs by cutting out these people because we blew it on two of the biggest contracts. And what happens is that with now here are the people that I have no respect for. And that's the ones who are happy that some of these people got let go because they just didn't like them. You're really happy that somebody got let go? Really? Really? Anytime I hear anybody let go, anybody, I feel awful about it. Always. Always. I've always felt awful when somebody was let go. You may not have been a fan of somebody, but but have the compassion of a person. I mean, have the compassion of a person.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show, of course, brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports bozo of the day. I mean, it's pretty obvious. In order to appease Disney and investors, they did this today. I mean, is this what they're doing today with all the layoffs? Does that make the product better? Absolutely not. You're telling me that you let Jason Stark go and your baseball coverage just got better? Really? You're telling me that on a network where one of the staples is making sure the Dallas Cowboys are covered and you let Ed Werder go, you got better? Really? You got better? College basketball where Dana O'Neill could pick up a phone and get a hold of Jay Wright and he'd call back like that, you got better? Brett McMurphy covering college football, pick up a phone and call anybody, Nick Saban, whatever, and say, I need a quote on something. I'm looking at a story. You think not having him there, they just got better? They didn't get better. They did tell their investors that they, quote, did something. They told Disney, their parent company, they just did something. It used to be that ESPN was the single most profitable arm of Disney. That's the way it was. But Disney, to its credit, has made some really good moves, such as acquiring Pixar, the Lucas franchise, and Marvel. Well, that's changed the financial outlook at Disney tremendously. Remember when ESPN laid off, 350 employees a couple of years ago? It was no coincidence it was following the complete bomb of Tomorrowland, the George Clooney movie that lost $150 million. Here's one of the points that needs to be made about this situation. You know, Jamie Sire and Chris Hassel and some of the others along the way here. Len Elmore, Melissa Isaacson, Jay Crawford, Roger Cossack, Trent Dilfer, Danny Cannell, Jason Stark, Jay McManus, Doug Padilla, Jeanette Howard. Just picking out some names people would know here right away. Eamon Brennan, Jeremy Crabtree, who does the recruiting stuff, Brett McMurphy, Jim Bowden, Pierre LeBrun, of course I mentioned Dana already, Ed Werder. This does not make a dent at all. Doesn't even make a dent in their $1.9 billion deal with the NFL for Monday Night Football. It does not make a dent in their ill-conceived $1.47 billion deal with the NBA. Are you kidding me? You know, these conference contracts, except for the Big Ten, are all 12-year deals. What did we just finish the college football playoff? It's what we just had, what, our third year of it? Third year. Still 9 years to go on the college football playoff contract, which coincides with the Pac-12. The only reason I mention it is that it coincides with the Pac-12, the ACC, the SEC, and the Big 12. They're all on the same track. So they're all 12-year deals, which means they would have started in the 14th season, which means they run out in 26. So the college football playoff, ACC, SEC, Pac-12, Big 12, all run out in 26. So you still have 9 more years to go on those contracts. 9 more years. Now the Big Ten contract's a 6-year deal that starts this year. It'll run through 2022. Same thing with Fox. So that means the Big Ten will be the first to negotiate in the next cycle. And you know, that's the college side of it. The NBA side of it, that's a $1.47 billion deal to carry NBA basketball. And you wonder why whenever you listen to an ESPN radio broadcast, TV, it's the NBA, the NBA, the NBA, the NBA, and guess what? The NBA Finals, which does extremely well, it's the number two champion, number two rated championship final of the major sports. Super Bowl I, NBA Finals II, World Series III, Stanley Cup Playoffs IV. Okay. But it's worth $1.47 billion. The ratings went down 14% in the regular season. And these guys are on there doing shows where, oh, boy, you think Melo can stay in New York? Who cares if Melo stays in New York? He's making $27 million a year. Who cares? I'm not worried about his plight in life. Who's the MVP, Harden or Westbrook? Who cares? I just want to know who wins. So you've got now between the NFL, the $1.9 billion on Monday Night Football, plus the $100 million for the one playoff game, so that's at $2 billion. Then the NBA, $1.47 billion, you're talking nearly $3.5 billion in contracts for two leagues. And you think these layoffs today solve that? And of course, I know you don't. You're all living normal lives, for goodness sakes. You understand what it's like to have bills and try to take care of the mortgage and everything else that goes with it. And that's what, by the way, most of these people are doing. These are not like high-end, multi-million-dollar salary deals. That's not who these people are. There's nobody that falls into that category here. I mean, the reporters that write for the magazine and things like that, these are all people making between $150 and $350 a year. Really good money, but they're not making millions. It's not the way it goes. I mean, you think Big Ten reporter Austin Ward's making $1 million a year? Really? No. That's what's interesting about some of these cuts. Some of these cuts make no sense. As to if they're like, okay, we're cutting big salaries, you know, or you know, to be more mobile and move forward. And it was interesting. I told you about the Darren Roberts piece on Yahoo at finance.yahoo.com, talking about these ESPN layoffs. And what really struck them is after they put the story out about the layoffs, they got 3,000 comments. 3,000 comments on the story, which shows the passion people have for ESPN. Now, this should not be, I don't ever want to take comments and make it into a poll, but it was interesting to the writer who tweeted out 50% of those comments were take Michael Smith and Jamel Hill off the air. 50%. Yeah, you could see some, you know, people don't like certain people. Take off this person, that person. To have 50% say two people should go. And, of course, I read that and I knew right away Michael Smith and Jamel Hill absolutely were not going. When they made that move from, what was it called, His and Hers? That was the name of the show?
Yes, that was their midday show, and then the show went on hiatus for between 3 and 6 months before they got the 6 o'clock gig.
Right. Well, it was planned because they obviously had to put together what they wanted to do.
Yes.
For what they the way they call it, SC6.
Yes. Or yeah, AKA the six.
The six. Okay. I've never seen the show. I've never seen it. I've had several people who have seen it, and I have not heard one complimentary thing about it. That's their opinion. Again, I haven't seen it. But I also know that when they were given that time slot, so I knew they were not going to go. That I did know. Because when they were given that time slot, from what I understand, they were told that they had 3 years to make it work. And they've only been on 3 months. In all fairness to them, they've only been on for 3 months. But they were told they had 3 years to make that work. Which is fair enough. That's a fair enough amount of time to let people know if it's going to work or not. To get you into your groove and get it going. But after 3 months, you've got 50% of people on a comment page. 50% out of three. It wasn't 50% of the 10 comments we received. Five said remove them. You're talking about 3,000 comments and 1,500 of them, half, say that those are the two that have to go. Now, does that tell you ESPN is listening to the people who watch? And by the way, those are two high-salaried anchors. But again, they've got 3 years to make it work, from what I understand. Which is more than fair. I mean, that's more than fair. To give it that kind of time to let it settle in, find its own identity, its own groove, things that they're doing now, they might continue to do a year from now, things that they're doing now, they may tweak, things that they're doing now, they may eliminate because it's not working. You know, it's all the process of making a show work. But I found it interesting that when word came down and he wrote that story on Yahoo about this, then the comments start pouring in. And, you know, I mean, look, the comments on everything. Everything gets comments all the time. But when nearly half identify two people as a problem, that does make you sit back and go, Well, I can tell you didn't go, It was ESPN. They didn't because they knew that they were locked in on that show and what they wanted to do for 3 years. Now, supposedly, she's going to comment on it tonight, and I will freely admit that, once again, I will not be in attendance. So, I don't know. But again, do you think that what they did today, actually made a dent in their rights fee fiasco? I mean, it's great for the teams. It's great for the sports. It's great for the athletes who are earning the money because they get percentages. Why do you think LeBron doesn't sign a five-year deal? He keeps signing deals that take him to what the next level of the max contract will be. And the reason that there is another level is because of the ESPN contract. If you're wondering, Turner pays $1.2 billion a year. Turner also does not get the NBA Finals. ABC does, which of course is ESPN. And you can tell that they're taking the curtain down on hockey. That is gone. I mean, they get their three primary guys, including LeBron and Burnside, are the two primary guys. Gone.
Well, they made it perfectly clear a long time ago. It's got to be at least well over 10 years ago when ESPN had the NHL contract and did a lot of the games. They just claimed, no, it's just not getting the ratings that we need them to have. And they just said, no. Right. So, yeah, you barely get any NHL talk as it is on SportsCenter. So it just kind of makes you wonder now. Yeah, we haven't heard about Barry Melrose today. But I know he does a lot of work, too, on NHL Network. So.
Right. But. Well, Buchagras was one that they were wondering about.
Oh, huge hockey fan. And, yep, does a lot of the college hockey. Has called a lot of Penn State hockey games on ESPNU.
He loves doing it. He loves the sport. All right, we'll come back, wrap it up in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. All right, great to have you with us. On the show today, you don't enjoy days like this at all. The names I know, the one person I know personally is Dana O'Neill. So needless to say, I feel horrible about that. And Jason Stark's been on the show. And then the whole thing stinks. It just stinks. If somebody was doing a bad job or really fouled up or whatever, you know, you'd have a different attitude about it. But these are professionals that, you know, I see, for example, how hard Dana works whenever I'm around her. And I see how hard Jason Stark works. These are the kind of people that, on the hard news side, made ESPN what it is. And there are a lot of people in that building in Bristol that quietly have been begging, get us back to what we've been doing. Get us back to what we were. And they won't do it. They won't do it. You got people cutting the cord and things like that, and they think they've got a better way of doing it. You know, I mean, the NBA, I think I've been pretty fair about evaluating where the NBA is. I've talked to, how frequently have I talked about, for example, the NBA being number two to only the Super Bowl in terms of the championship round and ratings. I mean, they've now beaten out the World Series. Now it probably won't be out the World Series this past year. The Cubs were in it. They did so well with it. But the NBA Finals does well. The rest of it just doesn't. Now, the playoffs do okay. And in particular, if it's your turn to host the Eastern Conference playoff, you do okay. But they're splitting it with Turner. And it's not the fault. Again, when you look at, is ESPN better now that Jason Stark's been laid off? Is their baseball coverage better because they laid off Jason Stark? Is ESPN's college basketball coverage better because Dana O'Neill got laid off? Or that Eamon Brennan got laid off? Is ESPN's college football coverage better because Brett McMurphy got laid off? or the recruiting reporting any better because Jeremy Crabtree got laid off. You've got some of the people that they've got here that they laid off. You know, is ESPN, the Cowboys are the hot commodity in the NFL, whether you like it or not. Most of the Cowboy games are going to end up being on national TV. Who was the Cowboys beat reporter? Which then brings up the question, is ESPN better now that they've laid off Ed Werder? Really? The entire idea is, whether it's in business or in life, you either get better or you get worse. You never stay the same. So, what did they do today? Did ESPN get better or get worse? Because they didn't stay the same. It's my opinion they got worse. And, to me, the watershed day that sent them down this path of being worse were two of them. One where they dramatically overpaid, probably by $500 million on the NFL contract. Why, you know, why is their contract $1.9 billion and the number two contract is $1.1 billion? Why? Why is the NBC Sunday Night Football contract exactly one half of the ESPN Monday Night contract and Sunday Night gets the better games by a wide margin and better ratings? Why? Why do you pay $1.47 billion for the NBA and take the rights and jump them up 186%? Why? Why do you jump the rights 186% on the NBA? What does that do for you? Some of the people that have made this network extremely respectable and a must-read or a must-see were among those let go today.
We're your home for news, sports, weather, and your home for the Phillies, News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury.